In the small Mexican town of Piedras Negras, near the Texas border, a remarkable tale of forbidden love, family tradition, and culinary magic unfolds. Laura Esquivel's Like Water for Chocolate captured readers' imaginations when it was published in 1989, becoming an international sensation that spent over a year on the New York Times bestseller list. The novel's unique blend of magical realism and traditional Mexican recipes has made it a staple in university literature courses worldwide. When acclaimed director Alfonso Arau adapted the book into a film in 1992, it became the highest-grossing foreign language film in U.S. history at that time. What makes this story so compelling? Perhaps it's the way it speaks to our deepest desires, how we hunger not just for food, but for passion, freedom, and self-determination in a world bound by tradition and expectation. Tita de la Garza entered the world prematurely on her family's kitchen table, amid the pungent aroma of chopping onions. Her birth was extraordinary. She arrived on a tide of tears so voluminous they left enough salt to fill a 10-pound sack when dried. This unusual entrance foreshadowed her profound connection to the kitchen, a space that would become both her sanctuary and prison. Just 2 days after her birth, Tita's father died suddenly of a heart attack, leaving her mother, Elena, a bitter widow tasked with running their ranch and raising three daughters alone. With her mother emotionally unavailable, Tita found maternal love in Nacha, the family cook who became her primary caretaker. Under Nacha's patient guidance, Tita developed an intuitive understanding of food that transcended mere cooking. She could sense when beans were ready without tasting them, judge the doneness of tamales by their aroma, and communicate with ingredients as if they were living entities. While her sisters Rosora and Gertrudis feared the kitchen's mysteries, Tita thrived there, creating elaborate games involving food, fashioning little sausage animals that she would only dismantle to make her beloved Christmas rolls. By 15, Tita had grown into a beautiful young woman with an extraordinary culinary gift. When Pedro Musquiz asked to speak with her mother about marriage, Tita's heart soared with hope and possibility. But her dreams shattered against the immovable force of family tradition. As the youngest daughter, Tita was forbidden to marry, destined instead to care for her mother until death. This cruel dictate had been passed down through generations without question, and despite Tita's silent rebellion, she found herself powerless against her mother's iron will. In a shocking turn that would set the course for decades of silent suffering, Pedro agreed to marry Tita's sister, Rosora, instead. His motivation to remain close to Tita, the woman he truly loved, provided little comfort as Tita watched her sister claim the man who had awakened passion in her soul. That first encounter with Pedro had transformed her. His burning gaze made her feel like dough plunged into boiling oil, and when their hands touched while passing serving trays, the electricity between them was undeniable. Now, with her future sealed by tradition, Tita retreated to the only realm where she maintained control, the kitchen, where her emotions would soon find expression through food in ways no one could have imagined. The preparation of Pedro and Rosora's wedding cake marked Tita's first experience with food as a vehicle for her emotions. As she and Nacha labored over the elaborate Shabella cake, Tita's tears fell uncontrollably into the batter, infusing it with her profound sorrow. The meringue, usually firm and stable, became oddly affected by her grief. Even Nacha, upon tasting the icing, was suddenly overcome with memories of her own lost love, a wedding that never happened decades earlier. The emotional potency of Tita's tears created a contagious longing that would soon affect everyone at the wedding. During the ceremony, Tita maintained dignified composure despite being the subject of whispered gossip. When Pedro embraced her during the congratulations, he whispered his true feelings. "Through this marriage, I have gained what I really wanted, the chance to be near you, the woman I really love." These words rekindled her spirit, though Mama Elena threatened her afterward with a stern glare. The wedding reception revealed the first manifestation of Tita's culinary magic. When guests consumed the cake, they were seized by overwhelming nostalgia and collective vomiting, effectively ruining Rosora's wedding day. only Tita remained unaffected by the cake's strange power. This pattern continued when Pedro presented Tita with roses to celebrate her first year as a ranch cook. Unable to discard this precious gift, Tita incorporated the petals into a pre-Hispanic recipe for quail in rose petal sauce. The resulting dish became a medium of forbidden communication between lovers. As Pedro savored each bite, he experienced voluptuous delight, while Gertrudis, Tita's middle sister, became overwhelmed with sexual heat so intense that water evaporated before touching her skin, causing the shower stall to catch fire. The meal's most dramatic effect was on Gertrudis, who fled naked across the ranch, her rose-scented sweat traveling miles to summon a revolutionary soldier. Without stopping his galloping horse, he swept Gertrudis onto his saddle, and they made passionate love while riding away, a spectacular escape from the confines of tradition that Tita and Pedro witnessed with both awe and envy. This moment of liberation through food demonstrated the transformative power of Tita's cooking, not just nourishing bodies, but freeing souls from societal constraints. Each dish Tita prepared became increasingly potent, revealing her growing ability to transmute emotion into flavor. When she later created oxtail soup during a period of emotional numbness, the familiar tastes awakened memories of cooking with Nacha, breaking through her psychological barriers and restoring her voice after months of silence. Food, for Tita, was never simply sustenance. It was language, memory, rebellion, and ultimately the only true expression of her innermost self in a world determined to silence her. The birth of Rosaura and Pedro San Roberto created an unexpected emotional triangle that further complicated the already strained family dynamics. When circumstances forced Tita to deliver the baby alone, she experienced a surprising surge of love for both her sister and the newborn. This tenderness deepened when the wet nurse hired to feed Roberto was killed by a stray bullet during revolutionary fighting. In what can only be described as a miraculous manifestation of her emotional connection to the child, Tita, an unmarried virgin, began producing milk to nurse her nephew. This supernatural occurrence allowed Tita to create an intimate bond with Roberto, secretly nursing him with Pedro's complicit knowledge. Their shared moments with the child created a surrogate family unit, with Tita experiencing the maternal fulfillment denied to her by tradition. The intensity of this connection alarmed Mama Elena, whose suspicious nature detected the dangerous undercurrents between Pedro and Tita. In a calculated move to sever this bond, she announced her decision to send Pedro, Rosaura, and Roberto to live with relatives in San Antonio, Texas. The separation from Roberto devastated Tita, who had come to love the child as her own. When news later arrived that Roberto had died, allegedly from the absence of Tita's special care, her grief transformed into rage against the family tradition that had cost an innocent child's life. This tragedy became the catalyst for Tita's first significant rebellion against her mother's authority, leading to a confrontation where she spoke the unspoken truth. The cruelty of their family tradition had destroyed not just her life, but now an innocent child's as well. The complex web of family bonds extended beyond the immediate household when Tita discovered letters revealing her mother's own forbidden love story. Mama Elena had once loved a mulatto named Jose Trevino, who was Gertrudis' biological father. This revelation cast Elena's bitterness in a new light. She too had been a victim of societal constraints, forced to marry a man she didn't love after her interracial relationship was discovered. The cycle of repression continued when Rosaura later announced her intention to enforce the same cruel tradition on her daughter Esperanza, declaring that she too would be forbidden to marry. These intergenerational patterns of sacrifice and control revealed how deeply entrenched traditions could wound successive generations. Yet within this same family system, moments of profound connection emerged, Nacha's maternal love for Tita, Tita's nurturing of Roberto, and later, her determination to break the cycle by fighting for Esperanza's right to marry freely. The De La Garza ranch became a battleground, both familial and romantic, fought against the suffocating weight of tradition, with food serving as both weapon and bomb in this ongoing struggle. Even after her physical death, Mama Elena's influence continued to haunt Tita, manifesting as a spectral presence that appeared during moments of perceived transgression. This ghostly incarnation represented the internalized voice of authority and judgment that Tita carried within herself, a psychological extension of the control her mother had exerted throughout her life. The ghost first appeared when Tita discovered she was pregnant with Pedro's child, materializing as a furious apparition that glared at her with cold, condemning eyes. The specter's appearances coincided with Tita's moments of greatest rebellion against societal norms, particularly regarding her sexuality. When Pedro drunkenly serenaded Tita beneath her window, Mama Elena's ghost appeared in her room, scolding her for shamelessness and threatening divine punishment. This confrontation became a pivotal moment in Tita's psychological development. Instead of cowering, she finally confronted the apparition, declaring her right to live as she pleased and expressing the hatred she had suppressed throughout her life. This act of defiance caused the ghost to shrink to a tiny point of light that shot out the window like a firecracker, eventually causing an oil lamp near Pedro to explode, setting him ablaze. The incident symbolized the destructive power of unresolved maternal conflict. Even in death, Mama Elena's disapproval remained capable of inflicting harm. Yet the diminishment of the ghost also represented Tita's growing emotional independence, her willingness to reject the oppressive values that had been imposed upon her. The maternal specter made its final appearance during Esperanza's wedding to Alex Brown, John's son. By this point, Tita had fully embraced her autonomy, having fought successfully to break the tradition that would have condemned Esperanza to her own fate. The ghost's presence at this moment of triumph served as a reminder of the persistent nature of cultural conditioning, how deeply ingrained expectations continue to haunt us even as we consciously reject them. Tita's relationship with her mother's memory evolved throughout the novel, moving from fear and submission to confrontation and ultimately to a complex form of understanding. After discovering the letters revealing Elena's own thwarted love, Tita wept not for the oppressive mother she knew, but for the woman who had lived with frustrated passion. This empathy didn't excuse Elena's cruelty, but contextualized it within a larger system of patriarchal control that had damaged both mother and daughter across generations. In the aftermath of her emotional breakdown following Roberto's death, Tita found herself under the care of Dr. John Brown, a man whose gentle approach to healing contrasted sharply with the harsh discipline she had known all her life. Rather than committing her to an asylum as Mama Elena had ordered, John took Tita to his home, where he tenderly cared for her physical and emotional wounds. His patient acceptance of her silence created a safe space for Tita to gradually reconnect with herself. John's approach to healing was holistic, incorporating both his conventional medical training and the indigenous wisdom passed down from his grandmother, Morning Light. He shared with Tita his grandmother's fascinating theory about internal matches. Each person is born with phosphorus matches in their core that require oxygen from a loved one's breath and a candle, food, music, caress, or sound to ignite. These explosions, he explained, nourish the soul, and without them, the soul wanders homeless. This metaphorical framework gave Tita a new way to understand her emotional starvation under her mother's care. The relationship that developed between Tita and John represented a different kind of love than her passionate connection with Pedro. With John, Tita experienced acceptance, respect, and genuine concern for her well-being, qualities largely absent in her previous relationships. When he eventually proposed marriage, Tita accepted, recognizing in him the possibility of a life free from the destructive patterns of her past. Though his kiss didn't affect her as Pedro's had, she valued the stability and kindness he offered. John's home also introduced Tita to his great aunt, a deaf, elderly woman who communicated through written notes and lip reading. This encounter with different forms of communication expanded Tita's understanding of how people connect across barriers, a lesson that would prove valuable as she navigated her complex relationships. The Brown household, with its blend of American pragmatism and indigenous Mexican wisdom, became a sanctuary where Tita could reimagine her identity beyond the confines of the De La Garza Ranch. This period of healing was interrupted when bandits attacked the ranch, raping Chencha and leaving Mama Elena paralyzed from the waist down. Tita's sense of duty compelled her to return home to care for her mother, despite having been disowned. Their reunion marked a subtle shift in power dynamics. Tita held her mother's gaze firmly for the first time, and Mama Elena lowered hers, a silent acknowledgement of changing authority. Though their relationship remained fraught, Tita's time with John had strengthened her enough to maintain boundaries even while fulfilling familial obligations. Of the three De La Garza sisters, Gertrudis underwent the most dramatic transformation, her journey embodying the revolutionary spirit sweeping through Mexico in the early 20th century. After her spectacular escape on horseback with Juan Alejandrez, Gertrudis briefly worked in a brothel before finding her true calling in the Revolutionary Army. When she returned to the ranch years later, she had risen to the rank of general, commanding 50 soldiers and traveling in a Model T Ford, symbols of her embrace of modernity and rejection of traditional feminine roles. Gertrudis's return represented a triumphant alternative to the paths available to women of her time. Rather than being defined by marriage or family obligation, she had carved out an identity through action and leadership. Her military uniform, her confident stride, and her unabashed sexuality all challenged conventional notions of womanhood. Even more revolutionary was her marriage to Juan, which existed on terms of mutual respect and passion rather than duty or propriety. Upon arriving at the ranch, Gertrudis immediately requested hot chocolate, demonstrating that despite her transformation, she remained connected to the sensory pleasures of home. As she sipped the carefully prepared beverage, she closed her eyes with each taste, savoring the familiar flavors that linked her present self to her past. This moment highlighted how food served as an emotional anchor, even for the most liberated character in the novel. Gertrudis's presence catalyzed change within the household. Her uninhibited dancing to Juan's music, her colorful stories of battle, and her practical advice to Tita about contraception all introduced elements of the outside world into the cloistered ranch environment. When she struggled to make cream fritters in the kitchen, a space where she had never been comfortable, she enlisted her sergeant's help without concern for propriety, demonstrating her pragmatic approach to gender roles. Most significantly, Gertrudis served as a living example of possibility for Tita. Her successful escape from family constraints and her creation of an authentic life on her own terms provided a template for resistance. When she advised Tita to continue fighting for Pedro, she articulated the novel's central theme, that passion and personal fulfillment are worth battling for, even against seemingly insurmountable social barriers. Gertrudis's mulatto son, born later with Mama Elena's striking blue eyes, became living proof of the family's suppressed history and the futility of denying true nature in the name of social convention. After decades of thwarted passion, Tita and Pedro's relationship reached its climax against the backdrop of Esperanza and Alex's wedding. The celebration represented not just the union of two people, but the successful breaking of the cruel tradition that had blighted Tita's life. Esperanza's freedom to marry was Tita's greatest victory, a refutation of the cycle of sacrifice that had damaged generations of De La Garza women. The wedding feast featured Tita's signature dish, chiles and walnut sauce. The recipe required meticulous preparation, grinding peeled nuts with cheese and cream, seasoning with salt and white pepper, then garnishing with pomegranate seeds. The filling combined fried onions, ground meat, cumin, sugar, fruits, nuts, and tomatoes, all stuffed into carefully roasted and peeled chiles. This labor-intensive creation produced an unexpected aphrodisiac effect on the guests, sending them rushing away to make passionate love, a final demonstration of Tita's ability to infuse food with emotional and physical power. Left alone at last, Tita and Pedro entered a transformed bedroom with white silk sheets and 250 candles. Their lovemaking was so intense that animals fled the ranch, and Tita experienced a transcendent climax that seemed to connect her to the universe itself. But at the height of their passion, Pedro's heart stopped beating. With his death, Tita instantly knew that her inner fire would soon cool without its fuel. Desperate not to be separated from Pedro again, Tita consumed the candles John had given her, one by one, while summoning her most passionate memories. Each candle, meeting her torrid recollections, ignited within her body. Her vision brightened until she saw Pedro's luminous figure waiting at the end of a dark tunnel, an image inverting her birth into the world. Their spiritual reunion culminated in one final amorous explosion, their fiery bodies throwing off sparks that ignited the bedspread and eventually engulfed the entire ranch in flames. For a week, the inferno burned, visible from neighboring towns who mistook it for wedding fireworks. When Esperanza returned from her honeymoon, all that remained under layers of ash was Tita's cookbook, the physical record of her emotional journey preserved through recipes. This cookbook, passed down to Esperanza's daughter, the narrator, ensured that Tita's story would endure beyond her physical existence. The fire that consumed the ranch represented both destruction and purification, the burning away of painful history and the release of long-suppressed desire. The land, fertilized by ashes, became extraordinarily productive, eventually housing an apartment building where descendants continued to live. This transformation echoed the novel's central metaphor. Like water reaching its boiling point for chocolate, human passion, when contained too long, must eventually find explosive release. Throughout Like Water for Chocolate, food serves as both the embodiment of tradition and the vehicle for rebellion. Each monthly recipe represents the accumulated wisdom of generations, techniques passed from mother to daughter, preserving cultural identity through precise measurements and methods. Yet in Tita's hands, these same recipes become expressions of her innermost desires, transformed by her emotional state into powerful agents of change. This duality reflects the novel's nuanced approach to tradition itself. While Esquivel critiques the blind adherence to customs that cause suffering, particularly the tradition requiring youngest daughters to remain unmarried, she simultaneously celebrates the cultural practices that provide meaning and connection. The monthly structure of recipes, the ritual preparation of dishes for specific occasions, and the communal aspects of dining all create a framework for human experience that the novel treats with reverence. Tita's rebellion is not against Mexican culinary tradition, but against the arbitrary rules that deny human fulfillment. Her cooking represents a reclamation of tradition as a living, evolving force rather than a static set of restrictions. When she prepares quail in rose petal sauce annually to honor Gertrudis' liberation, she transforms a pre-Hispanic recipe into a personal ritual of remembrance and resistance. Similarly, when she fights for Esperanza's right to marry, she doesn't reject family responsibility, but reimagines it in more humane terms. The novel's magical realism, where tears alter cake consistency and passion causes spontaneous combustion, serves as a literary technique that bridges the rational modern world with the mystical elements of traditional culture. This blending suggests that the seemingly supernatural aspects of life are simply natural phenomena we haven't yet learned to measure or explain. Tita's culinary magic isn't presented as fantasy, but as an extension of the real emotional power food carries in human experience. In the final analysis, Like Water for Chocolate offers a vision of tradition not as something to be discarded in the name of progress, but as a rich inheritance to be selectively preserved and thoughtfully adopted. The cookbook that survives the fire becomes a metaphor for this approach, recipes preserved not as rigid formulas, but as templates for future generations to infuse with their own emotional truths. The narrator's preparation of Christmas rolls for her birthday in the novel's conclusion suggests that this process continues, with each cook adding their unique essence to dishes that have nourished bodies and souls across time.